Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I like to tell you I had a tremendous week this week. I had a chance to testify. That's what I said, testify. I went to a meeting with House of Representative John Conyers, House of Representative Peters, Senator Burt Johnson, and several other elected officials in the city of Detroit. I should say Highland Park. I tell you, we had a good time. EM, Emergency Manager Joseph Harris, was there. And I want to tell you, we put it on him. He got a spanking he will never, ever, ever forget. I mean, what we did to him was criminal. I was shocked to see him at this meeting. Matter of fact, he got a chance to testify, and he was lying through his teeth. I guess he didn't believe that we had the documentation to support what we were saying. And what we did, we put it on every time he said something that was not true. I reached into my attaché case and brought out a document to prove that he was lying. One of the things that he have done, Gene Clark Park, he have made it off limit to the residents of Benton Harbor during the PGA. Let me repeat that. He said no residents of the city of Benton Harbor will be allowed in the picnic area, on the beach, anywhere near the park. He's also saying the street where the residents live, that they have to go up in order to get home, they will not be able to use that street. Well, he's saying he's going to have the whole area taped off. But we are still going to be there because at that time, he will be no longer in the city of Benton Harbor. We now have 215,000 signed petitions. And we're going to take them to Lansing Wednesday morning to the Secretary of State office and put them right on top of her desk and tell her we want the EMs in all the cities in Michigan removed immediately. I tell you, we've been having a tremendous time. I was in Detroit just this last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We was teaching a class at the University of Michigan, talking about the EM and talking about the condition of the city of Benton Harbor. Nobody will believe this. But I'm here to tell you, the fight is on. Also, the NAACP, a total sellout, and it's been proven. I am going to expose the NAACP for what they are, a 102-year-old organization. Can you imagine why Martin Luther King did not go under the NAACP leadership? Can you imagine why Martin Luther King was not a member of the NAACP? Have anybody ever thought of that? Everybody that you know of that really did something actually was not part of the NAACP. Thurgood Marshall, he was part of the NAACP. That's when the NAACP was actually working. But here, what they did this week, we stopped them from having an election. But now what they want to do, they don't want to have an election April 14th. They're desperate to have me removed. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sue their butts. Yes, I'm going to sue them, and I'm going to charge them with conspiracy. You see, and we have the evidence to support it. But I tell you, it's been a well of a week. I'm telling you this. I'm telling you not what I know. I'm telling you everything that a man could think about. But at this time, why don't we listen to a little Martin Luther King, and then we'll bring on our first guest, which will be Ralph Pointer. And this is a big, big week for Ralph. We got to make sure that we get the word out about Lynn so people can understand how important it is to be at that courthouse in New York. I believe it's Wednesday, and I believe they're going to camp out Tuesday night, starting at 5 o'clock, if I'm correct. If I'm not, I'm pretty sure Ralph will correct me. But let's get this going. Let's listen to a little Martin Luther King.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, Let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney, the Pinckney Show, and I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I want everybody to know this who's listening today. This show is dedicated to Lynn Stewart. This is the Lynn Stewart Show today. I want everybody to be talking about Lynn Stewart. Before we get to that, though, and bring in Ralph, I want everybody who's caring an NAACP card to burn it. It's time that we expose the NAACP for what they really are. It's time that we take this thing to a whole different level. We have given the NAACP a free pass. You know, what they did in the past, trust me, they'll never do in the future. They are strictly a corporate organization that's using black people. Only thing they care about is these Freedom Fund dinner and money that the unit sends to them. So I'm telling each and everyone out there today, I want you to listen to me. If you are a card-carrying member of the NAACP, we're going to burn our cards. Matter of fact, we'll do it together next week. That way you can have your card ready. We're going to show the NAACP how serious we are. We're going to make them stop putting up or shedding up. I am sick and tired of these organizations that can help, won't help. Every time something goes on, even with this Emergency Manager Act, the NAACP have failed to take a part in it, And now they're upset with me because I'm on Whirlpool and it's EM. So listen, next week, don't forget, if you are a card-carrying member of the NAACP, we're going to burn them next week. And on that note, I got to bring in my good friend, a man who I love, a real activist who's been working extremely hard, and we're working on land. Let's bring in Ralph Point. Ralph Point, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney, and I want to say thank you so very much for giving me airtime to discuss Lynn. But before we do that, I would like to stress to the listening audience how important the statement you have just made is. It is important because for so many years, so many people who claim to be on our side do so many things against us, and we allow it, that I sometimes wonder if we're ever going to be free. But I do know this, we will never be free as long as we allow people to lead us down the wrong path. Instead of the path of justice, the path of money lining their individual pockets. As you say, following the will of the corporations that are here to destroy us. And it is important. You have taken a very giant step to tell people, know your friends, know your enemy, know the difference. For far too long, those who claim to be on our side use us and manipulate us for their own interests. So thank you, Reverend Pinckney, for stepping up and saying out loud with so many of us who've thought and understood and kept to ourselves for fear of offending our friends, our religious associations, those around us, our political associations. And this is a beginning that I hope that people will begin to take to heart. It is. Everything is as it does. Every organization is as it does. Every association is as it does. And every person is as they do. And we must call it as it is. And this is a giant leap forward when you say, bring your cards and burn them.
Mm.
This is a symbolic act, but it's an act of understanding. It's an act of defiance that says we will no longer be led down the road by our nose that with anything that these corporate boot-licking lackeys would have us do. And on that note, I say thank you, and I'd like to get on to Lynn Stewart because this is a big week for Lynn Stewart.
Absolutely, and this is Lynn Stewart Hour. I want to talk about Lynn Stewart because this is a very, very big week for her and us. It's not just for
and
her.
And us, very important.
Yeah.
Because one of the things Lynn says, no more Lynn Stewart demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
She wants demonstrations for all people behind those bars. And first of all, and most particularly to the political prisoners, those who have understood the nature of this system and fought against it, they must be protected above all, first and foremost. But she says, do not forget the little miseducated guy or woman who sold a drug, you know, to keep their habit going, with no malice toward anyone, and have done great harm to themselves, are behind the bars. They are the victims three times. The victim of miseducation, the victim of going to prison, and the victim of the result of being in prison. So don't expect somebody who has been victimized all their life to pick themselves up by their bootstraps because they don't have any boots. So we must recognize, as she says, in your demonstrations on occupy the courthouse, occupy the federal courts where they're doing misdeeds, occupy the district courts where they're doing misdeeds, occupy the local criminal courts where they're doing misdeeds, occupy the civil courts. And anybody who's had their home foreclosed on illegally understands the occupy the civil courts, and most of all, occupy the family courts where you see the saddest scenes of disrupted, broken families and broken people and broken adults to be in the family court with the children. So she says, leave no stone unturned when talking about injustice. And now let me get to Lynn Stewart in the specific case. A young man asked me this morning, I hear a lot about Lynn Stewart. I just came in from the Dominican Republic, and he says, who is Lynn Stewart? And he called his wife over, and he says, well, he says, everybody here knows, but if you're going to explain it to her too, so we both can understand why we're going to be on the street Wednesday morning. So I started with, Lynn Stewart is a young white woman who was born not 5 miles from the city, in a small suburb, not even a suburb, a small borough, the borough of Queens.
Okay.
And she did not know Harlem existed. And she says the terrible thing of that was that she was the valedictorian of every class she was ever in. Very bright woman. So she says, if there's something that I don't know, it's because they didn't teach it. So she says, I realize now I have been lied to by everyone. And not only that, all other people who attended those schools were lied to because they never knew Harlem existed. And since the time when she walked from 135th Street and Malcolm X Boulevard now, which was Lenox Avenue at the time, to 125th Street in wonder, just looking around, saying, what is happening here? And she was dissatisfied with the answers she got. And as a teacher, she was dissatisfied with the miseducation that these children were getting. And one of the statements she made that I will never forget, when she says, I understand why these adults, these white and black adults, NAACP types, Reverend Pinckney, NAACP types, I understand why they're angry with you and I. And she was talking about myself and her. Mm-hmm. Because we were fighting against this system. But she says, how can they take their anger and rage out against these children who are as bright as any children any place in the world? How do they live with themselves attacking these children? And she dedicated herself to that fight on education, and she dedicated herself to the fight of women's rights. She dedicated herself to the fight of battered wives when there were no such name as battered wives. She dedicated herself to the fight of welfare mothers. She dedicated herself to the fight of immigrants. And she dedicated herself to the fight of migrant workers. And she, all of her adult life, she was on the cutting edge of the fight for justice for oppressed people. And she always said that everybody white in America has had affirmative action. The very fact that there is racism means that whites have affirmative action. Mm-hmm. Because if somebody of equal talent came for a job and you were white, you got it. She says, I can't imagine anything more affirmative than that. And she says, and every time you walk down the street, sit down at a desk, sit down at any place for employment, you got preferential treatment. And she says, and this skin privilege and white affirmative action, ever since the Depression up to today, was what moved white people ahead of black people. It wasn't the idea that people said, well, I worked hard, I worked two jobs, what did I have to do with the problem of black people? And her answer is, what you have to do with it is you got affirmative action over them. And this is why, one of the reasons why she is so beloved in the community. And in 1971, after having fought for 10 years on these issues, she came to me and said, you know, we have lost every struggle. We lost the community control struggle for education of black children and inner city children. Who was the opponents to education of black children and inner city children? The United Federation of Teachers and all other unions, right down to the union that delivered newspapers. When you fought for community control, they would cut off your newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, how good was reading? Well, every school got newspapers for their classes. The children read. And it was terrible then. And one of the things that we said, if we don't improve on what's going on in the schools, everything is going to get worse. Well, here we are, and it's worse. To make a long story short, she went on to law school, and then she began giving people decent legal help. And the thing that she said about legal help was that when you go into the legal profession, you start with legal aid. Nothing wrong with legal aid. She says, but a lot of people go into legal aid as their first job. They're not experienced. So how much experience, dedicated legal services do you get for the poor? And she says, little or none.
Mm.
And then the moment you learn your skill, you go on to charging more money and leaving the poor and dispossessed out in the cold. And she vowed, she says, I'm going to study hard. I'm going to work with great attorneys, and I'm going to continue when my expertise grows and my experience grows working for the poor and the dispossessed who never get decent legal representation. And we have all been there. And Lynn continued over the years. And one of the jokes we tell is she does more pro bono, that is free cases, than legal aid. Well, that's an overstatement. She couldn't do, legal aid, I forget how many attorneys they have, 500. She couldn't have done more. But per person, nobody came near her. And we used to tell a joke about her. She had taught school, and she had done, she had seen these children grow from elementary school children to adults and then get in trouble. And as her reputation grew and her name was bandied about, when people had trouble, they would go see Lynn Stewart. She would be carrying sometimes 100, 105, 110 live cases at the same time. And how did she treat them? She would wake up in the middle of the night and say, I thought about something. And I would say, Lynn, I understand perfectly, but go to sleep. You are not accused of the crime, so you can't do the time. And she would get up and do the time, and half the time she would make me get up with her and do the time. And it was so bad that when her son became a lawyer, her son, myself, and her secretary would have to protect her from the people. Because one of the things would happen, and she says, listen, Ralph, she says, with some grandmother comes from Harlem, comes from the black community, and they say, Miss Stewart, I heard about you. My son has been accused of a terrible crime. I don't know whether he did it or not, but I know he needs some representation. And Lynn would say, well, yes, I've helped many people, but I'm not a legal aid lawyer. I have to be paid. And when a woman would say, oh, yes, Miss Stewart, I know you have to be paid. And when they reached into their purse or into their pocketbook and pulled out this little purse with the dollars in it, and she says, I knew at that moment whatever was in that purse was the fee. And we said, you can't continue to do that. You have to put some time aside for the paying client. And it got so bad that the high-profile criminal client would take objection to Lynn's other half of the cases. And one gentleman said, Lynn, you're representing a bum on my street who was never anybody and never had any money, and you didn't charge him anything, and you charge me a lot of money. And Lynn would say, well, if you're unhappy with the representation that I give you, I guess you'll just have to fire me. Of course, nobody wanted to fire her. And this was the dichotomy. They would feel somehow disrespected when she worked for the poor. And recently, some of the people she worked for says, Ralph, tell Lynn to work for people who can afford it. And I'm saying, no, that's not what it's about for Lynn. And after her name grew and her expertise grew, those people who were fighting for our survival, those people who were fighting to support the movements in Africa, in the Congo, in South Africa, in Angola, fighting against the apartheid system, they were expropriating armored cars and sending money to the ANC, to the anti-Mobutu revolutionaries, to Angola. And when they got caught, they came to Lynn. Lynn defended them with the best of her abilities. And even those who hated what she stood for would say, well, I don't agree with any cause she ever supported. But nobody supported the cause better than Lynn Stewart. And she says, I do this because I understand that as much as where America is today, which it isn't much, but the people who died and struggled to make it get this far have to be respected, and their struggle must be respected, and I want to be a part of that long line of people who fought to make America a more decent place. So we call her, and rightfully so, we call her the John Brown of our time.
Mm.
You know, the Harriet Tubman of our time. And what angered people most was when she got on the witness stand to testify on her own behalf about her politics. She said, "I have no objection to the use of a gun."
Mm.
Because the most violent place in the world is America. The most violent government in the world is America. And I do not believe in stealing people's humanity. And people's humanity can be defined as those human rights of self-defense and self-determination. First of all, self-defense. No man or no woman should take another person's life unjustly. And she says, and everybody has a right to stand up for themselves. And she uses a Brecht poem to say, stand up for yourself, for surely you see, if you don't stand up for yourself, you will go down. And when she defended Larry Davis, the young black man who shot six cops in self-defense, the mayor of the city at the time, Ed Koch, said, there is no right of self-defense against the cop. And then says, yes, there is, and I'm going to prove it.
Yeah.
And as we see the young black people being shot in the back, shot in the platforms, you know, on the subway platforms, on the BART, running into their house to throw away a little marijuana into the toilet, accused of trying to throw marijuana away in the toilet. Whether they were or not is irrelevant. To be shot in the back over a toilet, this is outrageous. And what is more outrageous than that is the young men, now old, who defended the community. And when there's no more political prisoner, defenders of our community. The police weren't running around shooting up everybody so much then. They were ducking down in their police stations that were being attacked.
That's right.
And so she says, we must defend our defenders. And when she got on that witness stand and talked about her politics, that enraged many on the jury. And they found her, they says, now this proves that she is a terrorist helping the blind sheikh. And, of course, the blind sheikh was not guilty of terrorism. It was a setup. He was an innocent man convicted of Islamophobia, and she had the courage to stand up and say it. And an interesting sidelight is when Lynn first took the case, the blind sheikh had said, you know, this is a very dangerous thing she's doing, because he understood the racism and the Islamophobia in America. And Lynn, you know, like, it's a funny story. When he said he had to talk to me before she accepted the case because of, as a Muslim, you have to speak to the person's husband, the man,
right. Rule.
So when he was talking to me through a translator on the phone, I says, you know, we don't operate like that, Chick. She makes a decision as to the case she wants to do, and I support it because of who she has already defended, the cases that she has already done, the people she has supported. And he says, well, that's your religion. Let me practice mine.
Oh.
So he went through the whole thing of, you know, getting permission from Lynn's husband to do the case. And I had to say to him finally, my dear Sheikh, you do not understand. First of all, I have already been found guilty of the most heinous crimes in America. And he was, well, what is that? I says, I was born black and poor.
Mm.
And everything else is just small potatoes. So after a few minutes, I heard loud laughter, and he came on. He doesn't speak English, and he said, small potatoes.
Mm.
And from that day forward, whenever there's any conversation, he introduces himself as small potatoes.
Mm.
He understood. He got a slight glimpse of what America was about and the relationship that we had. And as I said to him, Ramsey Clark, the ex-attorney general, never lets me forget it, and he says it publicly all the time. He says, when we were talking about the case, Ralph said, "Don't do it, Lynn. It's very dangerous."
Mm.
And then I was ashamed of myself. I says, because when Lynn was fighting for the black cause in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, it was very dangerous. And I never said, "Don't do it, Lynn. It's dangerous." And how dare I say, in terms of somebody else's problems, "Don't do it, Lynn. It's dangerous." I wish I hadn't said those words, but when she said, "I'm going to do this, are you with me?" I 10,000%. "You know I'm with you. I'm just very worried and concerned about you." And I have to say, she showed more courage than I did. And we went through this, and she defended, you know, she says, everybody who comes to America has the right of all Americans. Now, that ain't very much today, watching what's happening. They're taking the rights away bit by bit. You know, you have no right of habeas corpus. But at the time, there was a supposed right of a lawyer, the Fifth Amendment. You have a right to a good lawyer. And the First Amendment, a right to free speech. She defended those rights. And she also would repeat the words of Queen Mother Moore. And she says she was so fortunate to have met the giants, Queen Mother Moore. And she was around when Paul Robeson was around. And as Queen Mother Moore said, "You have no right to any law that you are not willing to defend. You have no right to any situation that you're not willing to do. You have no right of the freedom of speech unless you have a press. You have no right to assembly unless you own a hall." So these are the things that she says she learned from great black thinkers and doers and actors that she has to put back. So Wednesday, although she has been found guilty of terrorism, supporting a terrorist, and I won't go into that, but if anybody cares to read that, it is the most ridiculous situation I have ever heard. No, you have heard of some ridiculous situations because you're out there in the court as a court watcher. You've seen it happen time and time again. 1 minute, please.
Yes. Hey, and this is very, very, very important. We got to make sure that on Wednesday, that we be at that federal court building to support Lynn Stewart.
Because as she says, "I have no faith in the judicial system of America, but I have faith in the people, that the people will show there. And that those in the courthouse will know that she has not been forgotten, and they will know that the people are watching." And she says that's the hope she has, and that's the faith she has. And I hope that everyone who was touched by her life shows up at that court. And if they do, if just a few of the people that she has helped or influenced, we will close that part of town down. And this is what has to happen. And this is for Lynn, and this is for all of us, because she says it is not just me, it is for all of us. And if you wonder who it's for, think of what the government has done recently. Another bailout for the banks, and the banks who have been found guilty of not only criminal documents, but of presenting them to the court illegally, having signatures that should not have been there, telling lies about how they investigated the case. And Mr. Obama and the Democratic Party is going to forgive them again, has already given them more money. But what they're going to do for the people is they're going to get between, they estimate, $1,500 or $2,000 if they stole your home.
Mm.
Well, that's not even filing costs. When they steal your home, you lose your down payment, all of the money you borrowed, all of the, your credit, everything goes, and they are offering $1,500 to $2,000. Not to say if your home was stolen.
Mm.
They know your home was stolen. When your home is stolen, we're going to find the banks $1,500 between $1,500 and $2,000.
And that's really peanuts. Hey, Ralph, listen,
yeah.
you got about 2 minutes. Why don't you clean up with 2 minutes so I can bring on Roz, then I got to bring on Mary, and take it from there. Just take 2 minutes and say whatever you want to say.
Okay, thank you. And Lynn says, never forget to thank the people, to thank Reverend Pinckney, to thank those who have answered the call, those who feel it in their hearts, and those who have raised their hands to do something on behalf of all of the people. Never forget to say thank you, and I would look to see everyone out there for themselves, for justice, for all of us, Tuesday night through Wednesday, 5 p.m. Tuesday, to 5 p.m. Wednesday, we're going to occupy that area. And most importantly, Wednesday morning to Wednesday 5 p.m., because our case goes on at 9 a.m. Send it through your heart. Send it through everything you got to send a message. Freeland Stewart. Thank you, Reverend. Thank all of the listeners.
And listen, thank you, Ralph. I want to thank you and Lynn for the work, all the work that y'all have done over the years. It has been tremendous, and I tell you, people don't understand how important it is. Like, you know, when I was teaching at the University of Michigan this past weekend, and these people, they didn't have a clue. But you know one thing I learned from them?
Yes.
If someone talked to them about it, they're willing to do it. And on that note, I got to bring on Roz. Roz, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Reverend, and I'm praying.
And thank you.
What?
Thank you.
Thank you. This is from God. We thank the Lord for this. And I'm
yes.
praying for Ralph. I'm praying justice for Lynn. I'm praying safety. I'm praying peace. I'm praying that people come to support him.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Ralph, I thank you because you know about the schools and you're a great teacher. You're just so articulate and you just know. So thank you for everything. Let me talk about LAUSD. Let me talk about the courts. The courts are so corrupt. My judge who had Judge Gerald Cohn from the Van Nuys Workers' Comp Courthouse here in Southern California, who had all the records, all the reports, had the testimony. He changed all the facts, which is called lying.
That's what it's called.
That's what it's called, right. He took the testimony that I said, and he moved things around, and so he lied again. He gave a medical diagnosis, and he's not a doctor, which is illegal. And this is going on in the workers' comp system. My case is 12 years old. We have people that have 20-year-old cases, 30-year-old cases. They try to kill themselves. They die off. Because they break the laws and the only ones making money are the insurance companies and the defense doctors and the defense lawyers. Now to LAUSD, who is investigating the teachers and to make sure that there aren't any more abuse cases. Now let me tell you about LAUSD. LAUSD could not investigate anything. They are so wrapped up in the waste, fraud, corruption, abuse. They're too busy to know anything that's been going on. They have turned their heads away from everything. When I was injured, December 8th of 2000, I was sprayed in my face with the toxic chemicals of a fire extinguisher by my student. My students were sprayed. Our tongues were closing. Our tongues were swelling. Our noses were closing. We had a hard time breathing. LAUSD, the principal, Mrs. Charnas, could not even call the paramedics. A three-year-old could call the paramedics. The proper procedures weren't followed. There was no nurse at school. Nothing happened to the boy. I had almost 40 students in my classes at school. So how could we expect LAUSD to investigate anything? It is so corrupt. The parents, the teachers, the parents, and there are good teachers. Let's not forget, there are good teachers that get up to teach every week. Every day they get up. Reverend Pinckney?
Yeah, I'm here. Keep talking.
Okay. So this is so important to remember that there are good teachers in the schools. But LAUSD, Dr. Daisy, Mr. Cortinas before that, the Board of Education, they all knew all this was going on, and there's so many other things. The investigation is going on. It's getting deeper. We have more media coming in. We have KPCC that contacted me, Sharon McNary, this week, and she said she's heard from other people because I've sent out an email to everybody. And it is going to get bigger, and the LAUSD, they should all be taken off to jail for what they've allowed to happen at the school.
No, you're absolutely correct, too. It's something that the people need to start doing. What we have done, we have become very complacent, and we don't do the things that need to be done. And it's time that the people move forward and did things in the right way. Well, listen, you got about a minute, so you can say whatever your heart desires. I got to bring on Mary. Go right ahead.
Okay. At UTLA, United Teachers Los Angeles, I've sent all my information because LAUSD violated the UTLA-LAUSD contract. They're going to go over it on the 28th. This is a big week for everybody I see here on the panel. And I'm just praying and believing that they will put up the money so they can sue. I can sue LAUSD for violating the contract because they took those papers, they used them, they gave it to Dr. Stahlberg, they paid him $8,000. He changed his 100% rating to 70. They paid him $16,770 for, you know, his other bogus report, lowered it to 60%. So I do not get any money at all. I have no money for food or to pay my bills. I don't want to lose my house. It's very difficult, but I have to say that God has sustained me through this.
Absolutely.
And you are such a gift, and I want to give all everybody listening 2 Chronicles 20, because when I think I can't win here, this is God's fight for me, and victory is coming. And I say that every day I get up. I'm not well from being sprayed with the toxic chemicals. I'm so exhausted and in pain all the time. And with my lungs, it's hard to speak and talk, and I'm always so out of breath. But God, everybody out there that's going through something, God is with you. Be expectant. A blessing is coming. And thank you, Reverend Pinckney. You are such a gift from God. And God is going to take you more places, and more people are going to know about you, and you are such a gift. You should just be so ecstatic that God has done this for you.
Hey, I most certainly is, Rod, and I tell you, you know, whatever we need to do to support you, help you, we want you to know we're here for you. On that note, I got to bring on Mary. Mary, you there?
How you doing, Reverend Pinckney?
Hey, I'm doing great.
This is the best show that I have ever heard on the radio, sir.
Oh, girl.
I mean, I am so uplifted. I said to myself, I hope Reverend Pinckney doesn't have the button on and hear me screaming in his ear. I mean, I have been enjoying myself, sir. You talk about inspiration. You and your team have inspired me today. I'm lifted up because here we are with a fine, fine leader who is calling it like it is and saying that organizations, human and civil rights organizations, that do not do what the people give their membership dues to do, and instead they do what the corporations pay them to do, we're calling them out and we are going public about it, and we are saying to the members, then you don't need to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
The corporations are paying them, and that's who they work for, so why should you pay them also? So this is really inspirational. And then we also have Mr. Porter, Mr. Ralph Porter, his wife, Lynn Stewart, former New York City attorney, former because what? Because she zealously defended her clients, unpopular clients, clients like the Black Panther Party members when they were being set up for crimes they didn't do, like Jacob Pratt was set up. That's Geronimo Pratt. You know, she defended all of these people who were unpopular with the government. And finally, she defended the blind sheik of, is that Egypt?
Right, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and she defended him zealously, and I mean, that was the last straw. So then they disbarred her, tossed her in jail, and she first got like 18 months. And then they stretched that by adding another 10 years because she still maintained that she was innocent. She continued to talk to law students around the country about ethical lawyering. And, you know, ethical lawyering, especially when it comes to criminal law, is almost outlawed. If you're representing people that they don't want to get help, that they weren't put in jail. And that brings me to another circumstance, sir. I want to tell you that the family of Sergeant Logan, that's the family of the man who Orange County Police, Orange County, California Police, a deputy, he shot that man right in front of his two daughters on a dark school parking lot. The man was trying to get in the car. I guess he had picked up his two daughters, and the police just came up and shot him dead. Did you hear about that?
Wow, I heard exactly what you said. Wow.
Yes.
He just came up and shot him?
Shot him dead in front of his two little girls right there in the van. At first, the policeman said that he shot him because he felt like he was a threat. Well, then he knew the girls were old enough to tell what happened, and that wouldn't go over. So then he said he shot the man because he thought the man was a threat to the two little girls in the van, and they were the man's own daughters he was picking up.
Mm.
So here's the deal is, we've got a sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps shot to death by an Orange County deputy for no reason, no acceptable reason that I can see. He wasn't doing anything to his little girl, and he wasn't a threat to the officer. But I haven't seen a picture of him, but I'm pretty sure he was black. Anyway, his family got the Jenny Cochran firm to defend them in a lawsuit. Lord of mercy. Now, I want y'all to go online and look up Mary Neal Logans, that's L-O-G-G-I-N-S, family. Because they're depending on the Jenny Cochran firm. And if you've been listening to me at all, if you've ever read any of my articles, that's Mary Neal, N-E-A-L, just type in Cochran firm fraud. Jenny Cochran has been dead for over 5 years. Before he died, he got some new partners to come on board with him, and they were white Southerners with money. Because what Jenny Cochran wanted to do is he wanted to start a reparations dream team. He wanted to sue the United States and major corporations that benefited by slavery.
Mm.
And so time he got that idea and partnered with these people, I guess, to get money to put together a big dream team, he came up with cancer and dead. Now, if you've been reading my articles, you know there's a thing called directed energy weapons. And that is, you look online for that, that's directed energy weapons. Directed energy weapons can be inserted surreptitiously without you knowing it. If you send your computer to service, or if somebody comes in your house that you don't really know that well, they can put directed energy weapons in your microwave, in your computers, whatever. And as you use those devices that have the directed energy weapon in them, it seeps radiation into your body. And eventually you'll come up with cancer. Now, I don't know if that's what happened to Jenny Cochran, but I do know that he died soon after signing a contract with these people, and they got his firm now. They got his name now.
Mm.
Every lawyer who worked with Jenny Cochran in California got fired for a forced out of his firm right after he died, and now they're deporting black people, basically it's black people, coast to coast.
Wow,
so this family of Sergeant Logan has now fallen into their clutches. I say their evil clutches. And somebody in California needs to call Sergeant Logan's family and tell them they need to find another lawyer, an ethical lawyer, a decent lawyer.
Why don't we do that? Mayor, why don't we do that? Listen, you got about 30 seconds. Say whatever you want, but let's do that. Let's talk about that. That's important.
All right. Well, I'm going to use my 30 seconds to say that you're absolutely right, Reverend Pinckney. It is time out for taking care of organizations that don't take care of us. It's time out for voting for people who don't really have the people's backs. They don't really care about the people's concerns. It's time for us to support people who support us. And that includes you, Reverend Pinckney. I ask everybody to go to BH Banco online, that's Banco, B-A-N-C-O, and get Reverend Pinckney's address and mail him your membership dues. Mail him a contribution as a minister who is doing the work of God. Mail him a contribution as a brother you want to uplift. Whatever it is that you want to do, whether it's a spiritual donation or whether it's a donation to an organization that is actually doing civil and human rights work, whatever your reason is, go to Banco, B-A-N-C-O, online, and mail Reverend Pinckney a contribution to continue his work, because he's not just talking about civil and human rights online. He is doing his best and putting himself on the line to actually see that something is done about all of this injustice in America.
Okay.
Mary Neal, thank you.
Yeah, you got it, Mary. Listen, Libby, are you there? Are you there, Libby?
I think I'll just say that Reverend Pinckney is still trying to be ousted by the NAACP. And it's highly possible that the NAACP, State of Michigan, and National are in on this. He is the president of the Benton Harbor, Michigan chapter of the NAACP. But they're trying to oust him through setting up an election. And it's, you know, the Whirlpool Corporation is involved with this. And a guy named Marcus Robinson is involved, and he is sort of the liaison from Whirlpool to the community of Benton Harbor. He's paid to, well, what should we say, pay people off and shut people up, basically.
That's right. That's his job.
And, yeah. And so he's working with, you know, various levels of the NAACP at this point is what is thought. On you know, setting up an election that was to be in February, now it's been moved to April 14th, and people are being given free subscriptions to and
membership.
Memberships to NAACP if they promise to go out and vote against Pinckney in April, and we think this is related to the very famous golf tournament called the PGA, which is being held in May 23rd to 27th in Benton Harbor on the shore, on the new Jack Nicholson golf course, on the stolen land that Whirlpool stole to build this golf course. This is on land that was deeded to residents of Benton Harbor in perpetuity. That means into eternity, forever and ever. So, yeah.
Hey, I want to tell you, that was great. That was great. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to invite the CEO of Whirlpool and the Vice President, Jeff Knowles, Jeff Fettig, to speak at Occupy the PGA. We want them to explain how a golf course going to help the residents of Benton Harbor. We want them to explain why the residents of Benton Harbor are not receiving any of those jobs. We want them to explain why it takes $1,500 for to get a vendor certificate just to sell food at the PGA. And what they, we want them to explain why all the spaces are taken up by white folks and none by black folks. We want them to make sure that they understand. I'm going to give them a personal invitation to come and explain this as we be rallying around the golf course. What they're doing now, they're trying to make sure that's the reason they went to the NAACP, who they sponsor and give money to, but their plan is to try to get rid of me. If they even think about it, I'm going to expose the NAACP for what they really are. They're nothing but a shell. They're an embarrassment for every black person. And remember, next week, if you have an NAACP card, we are going to burn that card next Sunday. So bring your card. If you don't have a card, make up one, because we're going to make sure that they understand that we're not putting up this mess no more. And only thing the NAACP cares about is that Freedom Fund dinner so they can get some money. That's all they care. They've been using black folks for years and doing nothing. That's why Martin Luther King refused to be a member of the NAACP. Even when at that time, after Brown versus the Board of Education, with Thurgood Marshall actually before, that if you look down through history, you'll find out they have been using us for years. But listen, I want to go back to Ralph. And Ralph, you got about 90 seconds to say what your heart desires.
We have to make every politician sign a pledge to support our communities in every way possible. They have to be against charter schools and against any organization that is against the interest of our community. Mainly, they have to sign a pledge to support Reverend Pinckney, or don't give them your vote. Don't give a minister a pledge that doesn't support Reverend Pinckney, because Reverend Pinckney supports us. Support those who support us. This is a historic judgment, Reverend Pinckney, to tell people to wake up.
Wake up.
Thank you.
All right, Ralph, I think we're all out of time because even the phone is making funny noise. So on that point, I want to make sure everybody understands next Sunday we are burning our NAACP card. So don't forget, that's March 4th. We are going to burn, baby, burn.
You know, right on.
I got to say goodnight to everybody. Everybody have a good night, and I will talk to you all soon. And let's talk soon. Let's everybody get together so we can talk. And listen, I'm going to be praying for Lynn, and I know my wife is listening. I'm Dorothy, I want you to make sure you pray for Lynn. We got Wednesday is the big day, but we need prayer now. We can't wait until Wednesday. We're fired up, and we want Lynn to come home, and we're going to do whatever we can to bring her home. We don't care what the government say. There's nothing but, you know, that's another shell that we're facing with. If you got a government car, burn that too. Listen, I got to go. Talk to y'all later.
Bye,
guys. Bye, class.
You all.
LynnStewart.org.